Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We are very privileged to have a man of, well, Renaissance man perspective, I guess, on various aspects of that war for the free world. He is an Israeli-American. He is an author. He is a television producer and director, a filmmaker, a man who has been accomplished both in the war of ideas and in the old-fashioned kinetic kind of war. He is a captain in the Israeli military, the Israel Defense Forces, in fact, has just achieved an extraordinary distinction, especially for a man of some years, and I'm going to allow him to talk about it. He is Dan Gordon, and he has graciously agreed to give us a full hour to talk about his new book, which is part of the screenplay for a new forthcoming movie. The book is entitled Day of the Dead, Book One, Gaza. There is a second part called Book Two, America, that will round out the story. But I look forward to talking about as much of both as we can with Dan Gordon for this full hour, a very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio. Dan Gordon, welcome back. It's great to have you with us, sir.
It's wonderful to be with you, and it's an absolute honor, Frank.
Thank you. Well, listen, let's start with your new accomplishment. I gather it's just been recognized, your achievement as a rather old man in the Israel Defense Forces. Talk about it a little bit.
Well, at the ripe old age of 68, having spent more than four decades in the Israeli military, I just became the oldest person to not only attempt, but to accomplish the 40-kilometer forced march for the Givati Brigade, which qualified me, been attached to that brigade, but qualified me to earn my beret. It's called the Masa Kumta. It's the beret forced march, and before you can get your unit beret for that brigade, you have to complete 40K forced march full pack in under 12 hours. It is a grueling thing, and no one my age has ever attempted it, let alone achieved it, and I was particularly honored to be the only soldier to be presented his beret by the brigade commander, Colonel Overwinter himself, who I think is probably the finest field commander in the Israel Defense Forces and one of the finest in the history of that storied army. So I'm enormously proud to be one of the wearers of the purple beret with the red-backed combat infantryman insignia on it.
Well, and rightly so. This is indeed a great accomplishment and capping, to this point at least, a rather distinguished military career. You've been involved in six of Israel's wars, including the most recent one in Gaza, which of course has informed your new work of fiction, Day of the Dead, Book One, Gaza. Let's talk a little bit about how it did so and what lessons you learned from that experience.
You know, I've spent 40 years in the military, most of that time as a reserve soldier in the Israel Defense Forces, and the absolute most terrifying thing I've ever seen was the advent of the terrorist tunnel warfare of Hamas against Israeli civilians, in which they dug terrorist tunnels over a period of 5 years. So this war was 5 years in the planning. This was their offensive, their war. They planned it for 5 years. They dug a series of a network of some 40 tunnels that went under Israel's internationally recognized 1948 borders, let alone our 67 borders, from Gaza into Israel, coming up next to kindergartens, next to one coming up in a dining hall where 800 people would have been taking their meal at a holiday, community centers, all of them near our agricultural suburbs, with the intent to kill and maim and take hostage and then drag back through the tunnels into underground cells as many men, women, and particularly children as possible. imagine, if you will, your front yard in your suburban community literally opening up like a scene out of Night of the Living Dead, and instead of zombies coming up, you've got 13 terrorists, each one armed with two anti-tank missiles, machine guns, grenades, thousands of rounds of ammunition, plastic handcuffs, and tranquilizer shots. That's what Israel faced in that war.
Is it also correct that some of the concrete and steel that Israel allowed to enter Gaza under the argument that this is necessary to rebuild Hamas-stan, as I think of it, from the last conflict with Israel, actually was put directly into construction of these tunnels for this kind of horrific, violent attack on school children and old people and others in the areas adjacent to Gaza and Israel?
Yeah, when people ask me, gee, who paid for these terrorist tunnels, my answer is you, the American taxpayer, and I did, and all of those who followed the Hamas hustle of we've been destroyed by the Nazi-like Israeli forces and must reconstruct for humanitarian purposes that concrete and steel that was supposed to go into rebuilding hospitals and schools and baby clinics, which are always on their list, actually was diverted into a 5-year-long project for their offensive against Israel to build terrorist attack tunnels. And that dates back from 2009 from Operation Cast Lead, which was the first of the three Hamas-Israel wars. We had to go in a place called Al-Atatra, where I was with the airborne. We faced these terrorist attack tunnels as a defensive weapon that they had. In other words, they prepared the battlefield. They wanted us to come into this city of Al-Atatra. It was basically a Potemkin village by that time. They had gotten to the residence, and they had tunnels connecting the various houses. The plan was to lure infantry into the house to clear it, since we want to avoid civilian casualties. We weren't hitting them with artillery or with airstrikes. Once half the platoon got into the house, the plan was to detonate an IED that would separate the first half of the platoon from the second. And then a rug would be pulled back. A kidnapping team would pop out of a kidnapping tunnel, grab the wounded, dead, and dying Israeli soldiers, whisk them out of the village inside of 5 minutes, and have 100 or 200 Gilad Shalits, he was the one soldier who was kidnapped many years ago, to have that many hostages. By the act of a gracious and compassionate God and the skill of Israeli military intelligence, we captured one of the Hamas terrorists who had on him a map of all the booby traps and all the tunnels, and consequently, not one soldier fell into that trap, and we were able to neutralize them all. Somebody very smart in Hamas said, look, it didn't work this time, but what if we turn this from a defensive weapon in our battlefield that we've prepared into an offensive weapon and dig those same tunnels underneath the Israeli border and attack Israeli civilians? Now we've got ourselves a divine victory weapon. And that's exactly what they did.
And as you've recounted, the grace of God was evident once again in that they just missed the fact that a field had been harvested of, I believe it was wheat that was intended to be cover for their penetration of Israel. Is that right?
Yeah, this is a story that the military never investigated because it really wasn't a military story, but it was widely reported in the Israeli press. The first terrorist tunnel attack occurred in a place called Kibbutz Sufa, and it was after 8 days of an Israeli aerial campaign, and we were assured by the impeccable Secretary of State of the United States of America that he guaranteed that the Qataris and the Turks were the guarantors of a ceasefire that was about to go into effect with Hamas. In fact, people were getting orders from commanders to be ready to start turning your gear in. The thing is over after 8 days, as it was in 2012. In about 4:30 that morning, the first terrorist tunnel attack happened. It came up in a wheat field that only a few days before had been full of green, tall, 5-foot-tall wheat that would have provided perfect camouflage for these people to be able to penetrate the civilian community that was their target. And by, again, the merciful act of a gracious God, it had just been harvested. And you can actually see on the YouTube video, these guys come up out of the tunnel, they ninja roll, they look around and go, where the
heck's the wheat? Hold the thought, Dan Gordon. We've got to take just a quick break. We'll be right back with more with author, filmmaker, and Captain IDF Dan Gordon. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom. With Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about civilization jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity. A law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Jared Ogden, former Navy SEAL and member of Team Military on National Geographic Channel's Ultimate Survival Alaska. I want to tell you about an issue that you probably haven't heard much about. Thousands of America's veterans are suffering from occupational and environmental exposures that they were exposed to while serving in the military. We call these the toxic wounds of war. From Agent Orange and Gulf War illness to post-9/11 burn pit exposure and heavy metals in the air, and other toxic exposures that we don't fully understand. The Sergeant Sullivan Center is a powerful voice in our nation's capital, standing watch over these forgotten wounded. These men and women can't do it alone, and they need your help today. Every dollar raised by Sergeant Sullivan Center goes to medical research, public awareness, and advocacy. You can make a tax-deductible donation today at www.sergeantsullivancenter.org. That's SGTSullivanCenter.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Dan Gordon for a very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio. Dan, of course, is a captain in the Israel Defense Forces. We've been hearing about some of the extraordinary exploits of his unit, the Gavate Brigade and others, and also the kinds of attack scenarios and threats that the terrorists of Hamas have been perpetrating and trying to perpetrate. Dan, let me just ask you, one of the things that has been particularly striking to me, and you've experienced firsthand, of course, is the restraint the Israeli military has exercised in doing these kinds of operations in Hamas-stan, very dangerous urban fighting of the worst kind. You're being castigated nonetheless by the United Nations in a new report for war crimes. Talk a little bit about the realities and what you make of this UN report.
Start with the fact that no less than authority than Colonel Richard Kemp, who is a NATO commander both in Afghanistan and Iraq, has been the most extraordinary man and has been the most vociferous in saying that no army in modern history has ever done as much as the Israel Defense Forces to prevent civilian loss of life in warfare. Just to give you a notion, what we do before we ever operate in any area that contains civilians, we first drop leaflets that are in Arabic saying, warning, the Israeli army is going to be operating in this area. If you live next to a Hamas operative, if you live next to an arms depot, which you know about, if you live next to a tunnel entrance, which you know about, leave for higher ground now. We are going to be operating in this area. Run for your lives. We have a unit that literally has the phone numbers of everyone, the cell phone numbers of everyone in Gaza, and we call all of those cell phones in that area where we're going to be operating in Arabic and say, hi, this is the Israeli army. We're about to be operating in your area. Run for higher ground. We then send text messages to those same telephone numbers. And then if that's not enough, before we engage in an aerial attack, we do something which our military invented, which no other army in the world does. It's called roof knocking. If we're about to hit with an aerial asset any building that we think contains Hamas operatives or arms depot or tunnel entrances, we first hit it with a sort of enlarged firecracker, if you will, which makes a very loud noise but does not cause physical damage.
Dan Gordon is our guest. He is an author, among other things, most recently, of Day of the Dead, Book One, Gaza. He is also a film and television screenwriter. He's been involved in myriad extraordinary films, including The Hurricane, Wyatt Earp, Murder in the First, and on and on. He's also a captain in the Israel Defense Forces, and he's been describing in considerable detail the lengths to which the Israeli military went in terms of trying to avoid unintended and certainly undesirable civilian casualties. And as you say, Dan, from your description, it's the most telegraphed punch one can imagine. And you can also fully appreciate, I hope everyone listening to us, the advantage that Hamas would take of such warnings. Discuss that a little bit, if you would, the effect it had on your military's operation.
Well, Hamas does two things. Number one, obviously we lose the element of surprise when we do something like that. But number two, Hamas has a doctrine, which is that they will carry out terrorist attack, but at all times they will wear the mantle of victimhood. And so what they did when we hand out leaflets and warnings to leave the area, they then come into the same area and not hand out warnings, but threats, and tell their own people under pain of death, you are not leaving your home. You are staying on your home. In fact, they would take children, put them up on the roofs to be human shields. And you can Google this on the internet and see the footage of it. You don't have to take my word for it. There's a wonderful organization called Memory, M-E-M-R-I, which has footage of literally then taking children and putting them next to a Katyusha or Grad launching site. There's a report from French television, an English reporter in French television, who has a rocket go off right next to him underneath a UN building with the UN flag fluttering above it. So they fire from civilian areas, hoping to get civilian casualties, maximizing their own civilian deaths so that they can carry out acts of terror while claiming to be the victims. And the world falls for it time and time and time again.
You mentioned, in that regard, the role of the UN is complicit in some of these activities. I'd love to get your thoughts on this so-called UNRWA operation, which, of course, has been the relief and welfare agency operating on behalf of the United Nations in the Palestinian areas for decades, which has, it seems its purpose is basically to perpetuate the victimhood of the Palestinians rather than to alleviate their difficulties. But, Gordon, when you look at this kind of conduct on the part of Israel's enemies, and by the way, ours, I mean, let's be clear, these guys in Hamas are jihadis who seek our destruction, just like the rest of them do. What do you make of the role of the United Nations in not just the events you've described on the ground in places like Gaza, but also in now, you know, sort of promoting this notion that Israel must stand accused of war crimes, despite the lengths it's gone that you've just described?
Well, it's somewhere between insanity and an overindulgent parent with a junky child who gives them money and says, don't buy drugs with it, but I know you're an addict. We were actually accused by the United Nations of committing a war crime by not supplying Hamas with our Iron Dome anti-missile technology, which we developed because they were shooting missiles at us. So by not giving them an anti-missile system, which we had developed to prevent them from killing our civilians, we were committing a war crime. How you get to that tortured logic, I have no idea, but that is the UN.
It is the UN. And I guess this part of what's so troubling is that it has become, as you say, it's a kind of parody, almost a theater of the absurd. And it seems as though most agencies of the United Nations, from the General Assembly for sure, right on through the UN Human Rights Council and UNESCO and so on, are spend most of their time focused on alleged and generally manufactured crimes of Israel. And we're also witnessing it as the place where, of course, things are playing out at the moment in terms of the recognition of a so-called state of Palestine. You spent a lot of time in Israel. You've also got a base here in the United States, of course. What do the people of Israel make of this kind of unchecked and ill-disguised anti-Semitism? I don't know how else to describe it on behalf of this so-called world body.
We make of it that it's anti-Semitism on behalf of a world body. There's nothing else to say about it. I mean, there is an obsession to the absence of everything else with supposed Israeli war crimes against the Palestinian people. And when one looks at the mass of crimes against humanity that are committed on a daily basis, to talk about Israel, which does more than any other country in the world to prevent civilian loss of life, both their civilians and our civilians, when we face an enemy that does everything humanly possible to maximize civilian casualties, both their civilians and our civilians, drives you crazy.
It does drive you crazy, and I can only imagine the degree to which you feel in Israel, the injustice of it, and a sense of isolation. And in that regard, when we come back in just a moment with Dan Gordon, we're going to talk about the U.S. government's relationship with the government of Israel and whether it is compounding this sense of isolation and perhaps further jeopardizing our most important ally, certainly, in the Middle East. That and more with filmmaker, author, and military officer Dan Gordon, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Effney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In 1957, the Soviet Union launched Sputnik, the first satellite, stealing a frightening technological march on the United States. That feat meant the Soviets could lob nuclear weapons over intercontinental ranges and threaten us here at home. So, Sputnik shocked Washington into action. Crash programs were undertaken to build our own long-range missiles and develop weapons to defeat the Kremlins. We are at a similar juncture now. as both Russia and Communist China have begun introducing hypersonic weapons delivery systems. Such extremely fast-flying platforms can be used to devastate our naval and other military assets and targets in this country, since we currently lack the means to stop them. We must respond, as with Sputnik, by putting our best minds and national resources to work on matching and defeating such hypersonic threats. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Secure Freedom announces the launch of our newest initiative, the Counter Jihad Campaign at counterjihad.com. We have gathered some of the foremost experts and activists to begin our fight back against those who long ago declared war on us. You can see our first two ads asking those who see something bad happening, like the attack in Garland, Texas, or the dozen jihadists at the Boston Marathon Killers Mosque, to say something. Join us and be a part of the Counter Jihad.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
I'm Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. At the G7 summit in Germany this week, President Obama said this about his strategy to take on ISIS in Iraq.
When a finalized plan is presented to me by the Pentagon, then I will share it with the American people. We don't yet have a complete strategy.
How can President Obama in June 2015 still not have a plan to deal with ISIS in Iraq? After all, he also said this in August 2014. The truth is the president does have a strategy to deal with ISIS in Iraq and Syria. It's to put significant restrictions on U.S. troops and to do as little as possible so he can say he's a president who got the United States out of wars, not into one. Ultimately, the president wants to hand this mess to the next president. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. This is a most important and fascinating conversation with a man who has actually been literally in the trenches with the Israeli military in some of the most intense and difficult combat operations that it has experienced, namely and notably in Gaza. And we've been discussing the lengths to which those who are in control of Gaza, the terrorist-designated terrorist organization Hamas, the Palestinian franchise of the Muslim Brotherhood, and the lengths to which Israel's enemies have gone to maximize not only Israel's casualties, but their own civilians as well. Dan Gordon, of course, is most recently the author of a very important new book on this subject. It is entitled Day of the Dead, Book One, Gaza. There is a new segment coming along, Book Two, which will focus on America. And Dan, I guess what I'd like to talk a little bit about is, as you've developed the plot in your new book, Day of the Dead, how these insights from your own experience and those of your comrades in arms and the people of Israel have sort of fed into your creativity and your fiction writing to bring home to the rest of us just what you all have been facing.
Sure. You know, when I came back and talked to my agent about some of the experiences that I had, he said, you know, this whole thing of terrorist tunnel attacks and your lawn opening up and terrorists coming out in the middle of a suburban community, he said, that's a movie. You've got to do that. And I said, no one's going to make a movie with Israel as the good guys. No American studio will do it. He said, well, then you have to find a way to turn that into an American story. And I said, well, how do I do that? He said, well, my job definition is the agent. Yours is the screenwriter. You come up with that, and I'll sell it. And I said, fair enough. And as I began to think about it, it suddenly hit me what I had been looking at and not seeing. And that was that throughout the operation in Gaza, ISIS had a very heavy presence in Gaza the entire time and was paying very close attention to everything that Hamas was doing with the terrorist tunnel attacks and analyzing why they were failing and how they could succeed. And it suddenly dawned on me, horrifically, that I have two homelands that I love because I was raised both in America and in Israel, one America and one Israel, that the country that was far more vulnerable to this kind of a terrorist tunnel attack than Israel was the United States of America. And I began talking with people both in the U.S. military and in the Israeli military, both with people in the Israeli intelligence community, the American intelligence community, DEA retired and current, FBI retired and current, Navy SEAL retired and current. And what quickly became apparent was our southern border is far more vulnerable to an ISIS mass casualty terrorist attack via existing drug smuggling tunnels that go from Mexico into California, Arizona, and Texas than Israel was to terrorist tunnel attacks from Gaza. And the reason is Israel's ready for them. We have 24-hour-a-day surveillance of that border where we see every square inch of it. We have constant aerial assets 24-hour-a-day over that border ready to strike within 30 seconds. Our most elite military units are in that border area ready to respond inside of 90 seconds. If ISIS cuts a deal with Mexican drug cartel, and ISIS is the richest terrorist organization in the history of the world with billions, which is a language that the cartels understand, there are existing drug smuggling tunnels that go from Tijuana into San Diego, in through which you could penetrate 500 to 1,000 ISIS terrorists with anti-tank missiles, machine guns, grenades, tranquilizer shots, handcuffs. Think of what three terrorists did in Paris in Charlie Hebdo. Multiply that by 1,000 terrorists. Put it if you'd like, a city like San Diego that has the juiciest low-hanging fruit you can imagine. Half the Pacific Fleet is at anchor in San Diego. One half the Navy Special Warfare Forces of the United States, the Navy SEAL teams, half are in the East Coast and half are at Coronado Island. Because of U.S. policy, it is forbidden for American military personnel to carry a weapon on U.S. military installations, which is why a fat psychologist named Major Nidal was able to kill 13 people at Fort Hood with two handguns against highly trained soldiers who had no weapons. When you take a soldier's weapon away from him, he's no longer a soldier, he's a victim. So you kill 20 rent-a-cops or 20 shore patrol, and you control the Navy SEAL station. You control the Pacific Fleet. And more importantly, think of what fun 200 terrorists could have hitting a sports arena with 18,000 people. Just 2 days ago in Tunisia, one ISIS terrorist in one resort hotel killed 38 British tourists in a half an hour. Imagine what 100 or 200 or 1,000 could do in El Paso or San Diego. And so the conceit of the novel became that ISIS is planning to implement the terrorist tunnel attack warfare against the United States via Mexico. Since then, I've been horrified to see how quickly what I thought was an imagined scenario has become real. What people have to understand is that the Middle East is for ISIS an R&D lab for what they intend to do to the United States. Iraq is not ISIS's goal. Syria is not ISIS's goal. When they say their goal is to fly the black flag over the White House, that's what they mean. Their goal is to attack the great Satan. They're the caliphate, and they can't be the caliphate unless they do a bigger mass casualty attack against the United States than al-Qaeda ever dreamed of.
This is jihad. Let's put a fine point on it. It is the triumph of their Sharia agenda that impels them. And Dan Gordon, again, I can't thank you enough for helping, hopefully, millions of us through both your book, Day of the Dead, the first part on Gaza and the second part on America, and the film that you are now in the process of putting together that will bring this home to all of us, just how real this danger is. As you say, I think it's probably a little bit of an exaggeration to say they're not interested in actually holding and utilizing territory as the caliphate's base in the Middle East. It's certainly that, as well as a R&D lab. But the global ambitions of not just this particular franchise, the Islamic State, but all of the rest of them who have exactly the same purpose, whether it's the Al-Qaeda folks, the Taliban, the Boko Haram, the Al-Shabaab, or the Muslim Brotherhood, as you know so
or
well.
Iran.
Or Iran on the Shiite side and Hezbollah and so on with it. Again, our guest is Dan Gordon. We're having a remarkably, I think, provocative but also very timely conversation about the analysis that he has done based on his firsthand experience and that of his comrades in Israel with tunnel warfare, offensive as well as defensive, and why we had best be alive to the danger of it here as well. And as you say, San Diego is a prime target indeed. Dan, this all raises a question which I'd like to turn to now, and we won't have time to finish talking about it in this block, but we will, I hope, before the program is done. The United States government under President Barack Obama has seemingly been, if not actually indifferent to all of these dangers, certainly unsympathetic to the Israeli position in them, and I fear much more worrisome, actually enabling of some of them. How does, again, very quickly, if you would, this look from the perspective of an Israeli, the position, the status, the kind of character of our government vis-a-vis Israel at the moment?
Right now, you have two main jihadi forces whose goal is, they are theocratic, they are fascistic, homophobic, misogynistic, imperialists, admittedly genocidal regimes, both who have said death to America and mean it, and one is Sunni and one is Shia. In the Sunni case of ISIS, the administration says, we don't have a strategy to deal with them, we're waiting for the Iraqis. And in the Shia case, it's the government of Iran, and we're doing everything possible to guide them to a path of being a nuclear power. Yeah.
Dan Gordon, pause for just a second with me. We want to drill down on both of those mistakes. Dan Gordon is our guest. We'll be right back.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It's been over 7 years since a church group from another state brought a couple hundred refugees to the rural county where I live. I wanted to know, how could they do this? What was the governmental process that allowed the resettlement of refugees to a county ill-prepared to assimilate them? Employment opportunities were scarce. The health department was not familiar with illnesses and mental health problems of people who came from parts of the third world. The school system was not prepared to teach large numbers of students who didn't speak English.
That's author Ann Corcoran discussing her new book, Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement and the Hijra to America. She explains how Muslim immigrants are being quietly resettled into American towns without vetting them, even for terrorist links. Corcoran also explains how the global jihad movement is using immigration as a stealth campaign to spread its influence in America. You can read Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement and the Hijra to America on securefreedom.org or purchase a copy on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
I'm Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. One of President Obama's worst foreign policy failings is the lack of a strategy to defeat al-Qaeda and ISIS. These terrorist groups are part of a global movement to establish Islamic supremacy and Sharia through violence. This movement is called the Global Jihad Movement. It will not be defeated without a strategy that recognizes its true nature. In January 2015, we issued a comprehensive strategy to defeat the Global Jihad Movement. It is called the Secure Freedom Strategy and is based on National Security Directive 75, the strategy that President Ronald Reagan used to defeat the global totalitarian threat of his time, the Soviet Union. Like President Reagan's strategy, we lay out a comprehensive plan on how the United States government can be reorganized and focused to understand and defeat the global jihad movement. You can read the Secure Freedom Strategy at securefreedom.org, or you can purchase a copy on Amazon.com. I'm Fred Fleitz.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for segment four of our very special interview with Dan Gordon, an author, filmmaker, Renaissance man, truly, as well as an accomplished military officer. In fact, now just recognized, despite his rather advanced age, as a member of one of the most elite and important military organizations in Israel, the Gavati Brigade. Let me just ask you, Dan Gordon, picking up on the point you were just making, the United States government is actively either acquiescing in or, worse, enabling these Sharia-adherent jihadist elements, notably but not exclusively, those of the Sunni stripe and those of the Shiite in Iran, most especially in the latter case. Again, what are the implications of this kind of conduct, this kind of policy, not just for Israel, but for the other country you and I both love, namely America?
Well, as I said, in the one case, you have a Sunni organization called ISIS, or the Islamic State, the Caliphate, which openly declares its ambition. It refers to us as the soldiers of Rome. By us, I mean America. It says it's going to fly the black flag of ISIS over the Vatican and over the White House. The caliphate, you have to understand, has no choice but to try a mass casualty attack that will dwarf al-Qaeda against the United States. You can't be the caliphate that's anointed by Allah, that's anointed by the Prophet Muhammad, and ignore the great Satan. It's like a heavyweight boxer who won't defend his title. They have to do a mass casualty attack, and it won't be one and out. It will be operating, I believe, from safe havens in northern Mexico, much like Gaza is for Hamas against Israel. The difference is Israel can go into Gaza and neutralize the threat. Can you imagine this administration under any circumstances taking action in Mexico against ISIS terrorists? I can't. So on the one hand says we have absolutely no strategy to deal with ISIS. We're waiting for the Iraqis as if this was an only Iraqi problem. It's an American problem. We're the objective that they really are looking to hit. On the other hand, the Iranians, who openly chant death to America, whom Khamenei, who is the supreme leader, has openly declared his intentions to destroy Israel and leads the death to America chants, we are on a path not just to guiding them towards a nuclear bomb. That's a misnomer. By the end of this 10-year exercise, they'll possess the ability to crank out several hundred nuclear weapons. We're about to make them the dominant power in the Middle East, throwing every American ally, and I'm not talking about Israel, I'm talking about all of our Arab allies, under the bus. So for the first time in my lifetime, maybe Obama does deserve the Nobel Peace Prize that he won, because for the first time in my lifetime, Israel, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and the Emirates are all on the same page. And also for the first time in my lifetime, they are arrayed against Iran, Hezbollah, the Muslim Brotherhood, and inexplicably, the United States of America.
I don't know that this actually qualifies for the Peace Prize, because I think what you've described really is a formula for war, not probably confined to the Middle East, Dan Gordon. It seems to me that what we're looking at, with particularly the possibility, and I don't think it's going to be 10 years off, by the way, no matter what this deal says, of a very formidable nuclear arsenal in Iran. But it is, of course, going to be accompanied by and made vastly more dangerous by the combination of those weapons and the means by which they could be delivered, not just against Israel, not just against Saudi Arabia and the Emirates and so on, even Egypt, but also Europe and surely here as well.
Well, and it's the horrible irony is that under the guise of trying to prevent nuclear proliferation in the Middle East, this is going to spark the largest nuclear proliferation in history in the world's most unstable region. Saudi Arabia will have no choice but to acquire nuclear weapons, and they don't have to develop them. They just have to buy them from Pakistan, which has already said they'll sell it to them. Egypt will come next, so will the Emirates. Everyone will have to, and once you have that kind of dynamite in that particular area of the world, you have worldwide disaster, not regional.
Exactly. We're speaking with Dan Gordon. He is a captain in the Israel Defense Force. He is also the author of numerous books, many of which have been turned by his good hand into very accomplished and highly applauded films and television programs. The new book is Day of the Dead that we're discussing today, book one of which is entitled Gaza. There is a second edition that will be coming out shortly, subtitled America. And Dan Gordon, we're witnessing, in ways that you have brought to life, a sense of extraordinary peril here. And it's a peril that I've got to say I think is extraordinarily intensified by the rift between the United States and Israel that has been achieved by this administration of Barack Obama. If you were able to have the ear of those in power in Washington, and I suspect through your art you do, as a matter of fact, What would you be recommending be done in the way of a course correction to try to tamp down these dangers, both here and over there?
Look, it's 1 year since the declaration of the caliphate. It is 1 year since the declaration of the President of the United States that we will degrade and destroy the caliphate, except he called it ISIL. There is no one on the face of the earth who would claim that ISIL has been degraded or destroyed in the past year. They've been strengthened and enlarged to the point where they went from 800 fighters to around 50,000 fighters and hundreds of thousands of sympathizers and a worldwide reach, as we've just now seen, with coordinated attacks in three different countries on the same day. That's a really scary scenario. At the same time, we are leading another country that's equally dangerous, if not more so, which is Iran, to becoming a nuclear power. So my hopes for the Obama administration are nil. They're committed to what they're committed to, which seems to me suicide. To the Congress of the United States, I would say, look, we have three things that we can do very quickly. Number one, get us out of this deal with Iran immediately. Number two, come up with a viable strategy to deal with ISIS in the Middle East before it comes to our hemisphere, and it is coming to our hemisphere. And the way you do that is stop confounding your friends and comforting your enemies. Arm the Kurds. First of all, turn that into a base of action. Second of all, get serious in terms of your airstrikes. If you want to degrade and destroy ISIS, you're talking about 150 to 200 strikes per day. What people have to understand, for whatever reason they don't, the Middle East is in the greatest upheaval it has been in 1,000 years. The world has not been witness to what's happening in the Middle East that's going on today in 1,000 years, and you're now adding nuclear arms into that mix and social media that allows you to jump over countries, gain adherence in any country in the world via social media with people who were carry out beheadings. Who would ever think that in the United States of America you would have to worry about beheadings? We're there now.
We are there now, and unfortunately, as you've indicated, I'm afraid in your new works of fiction, Dan Gordon, we're likely to see a lot more of it before we're done. Day of the Dead, Book 1, Gaza, is the book. Please check it out, folks, and take to heart these admonitions. Course correction is indeed needed. Dan Gordon, your prescriptions sound just right to me. Thank you for taking this full hour to talk them through with us, and I hope you'll come back to us again very soon. In the meantime, keep up the great work. I hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.